Top Gun themed Pinto came at a more perfect time as I'm driving down the road listening to the Top Gun theme. Car drives by me with President Trump stickers all over the car. That's America.
Yeah!
I love that. That's amazing.
Hour two of your Tuesday edition of Justice and Drew, bringing America right into your speakers.
That's ultra MAGA right there.
That's right. When you hear the Top Gun theme and somebody drives by you with a Trump sticker, you've just experienced ultra MAGA.
We have more... We do have more ultra MAGA talk a little bit later on in the hour. A little bit more is another Yahoo article. Yahoo grabs these from other places, so I don't. They're not always not coming from Yahoo. I think sometimes they grab them from like Washington.
Yeah,
Post and
MSN
stuff like that.
Does the same thing. I get a lot of links that go to an MSN page, but they're actually like a CNN story or somebody else. And
that's a new phenomenon.
It's yeah,
like the past
yeah,
like
it's
month.
Kind of annoying.
It's very annoying.
It's kind of annoying.
I'm sure there's a rational reason for it.
Yeah, I think it has to do with paywalls and.
But we have more. We have more backstory on where MAGA originated from. We did talk about it yesterday and how it was this 6 month workshopped, you know, star chamber people got together committee to workshop this whole deal.
Yeah, but a bunch of liberal cronies got paid a bunch of money to focus group something for Biden to say that he thinks might help. The election, you know, might help the Democrats' chances in November. And the best they could come up with was, I don't know, ultra MAGA?
Ultra MAGA.
I don't know.
Mega MAGA.
Mega MAGA?
This just makes them sound bad.
Try that. Mm. Let's see if that'll work.
Oh, no. They should, you know.
That'll make people forget inflation and gas prices.
We've hopped back into the Wayback Machine this morning. You know, I did a lot of 80s. I go back 90s and make it like extreme MAGA.
Ex-MAGA.
Ex-MAGA.
It's roller skating around.
Everything was. I remember that when everything from your soda to your deodorant was extreme, and clear.
Make Tony Hawk popular again.
That's a great documentary on HBO about Tony Hawk.
MAGA Underground.
I loved the clear fad. I was way into the clear fad.
We know
Crystal Pepsi,
Zima,
of course.
Rest in peace.
Fantastic. All right, here's a quick one.
You know, there's a bunch of clear sodas out there now. Like there's this.
7-Up?
No.
Sprite?
Yeah. No Temp.
Sierra Mist?
No. No. Damn it. It's a brand. It's like Zevia or something like that.
Huh?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yes.
All of their
flavors. Yes.
They're all sodas in cans.
Yes.
So you wouldn't know it when
Zevia.
You pop it open and drink it. But if you pour like their cola out into it's clear.
Right.
Their root beer
it's like
clear.
LaCroix. Yeah.
I haven't, there's that.
Turn off your mic, Tim.
Okay, sorry.
No, we were drinking the Zevia for a while, but I forgot. I don't know if it's the aspartame or what, but it was giving me headaches.
Okay.
Yeah. Now we do.
Those artificial sweeteners hit people differently. So
we do exclusively now, and I probably drink way too much, even though it's just water, but we do the. Like the LaCroix, we do like the flavored water now.
I like
the bubbly, and we've got that's almost exclusively what we drink in the in Justice household now. Here's a quick one.
I'm supposed to have my mic off. I'm sorry.
From the Associated Press, we find ourselves magically whisked away to Hawaii. AP has reported in the past 2 months, the city and county of Honolulu has sent traps in 5 areas and have caught just 67 chickens. Costing more than $7,000. They're dealing with a war against aggressive feral chickens, and the chickens are winning right now.
Thousands of feral chickens roaming the streets of Honolulu, apparently.
It costs them about $104 to catch them per bird based off of the rate at which they're catching them and the cost so far. AP says that catching chickens is costly because the traps are being vandalized and stolen, though it's unclear who was damaging them and why. Now the city officials are trying to address the public's desperate pleas for help while figuring out a cost-effective solution. They need a big, like, chicken wing festival.
No.
I know you got to catch them first, but...
I don't think you want to eat feral chickens.
No?
I don't think so. I'm not an expert.
Are they terrorizing people, or are they just waltzing around?
No, they're terrorizing people.
Yeah, the problem is so dire that a bill was actually introduced in the Hawaii State Legislature that sought to establish a state-funded program to address feral chickens.
Unfortunately for Oahu's chicken plague residents, however, the Senate Bill 2195 failed to advance.
The aggressive chickens, according to testimony, have, quote, overtaken the community. Residents say they're damaging and defecating on properties, obstructing roads. Should come here. Just call it a protest. No one will mind. CLM.
Zing! They're roosting in mango trees while making loud cackling noises from dawn until dusk. It's kind of like Justice and Drew.
Zing! I don't cackle.
Many of us work long hours, even double shifts, and to not be able to sleep due to the cacking and crowing of the feral roosters and chickens has really been an unfair burden and hardship, wrote one Hawaii resident, Majid Janaidi.
Another one writes, from dawn to setting sun, there is a constant crowing daily, and I work from home, so it is hard and sometimes embarrassing if I have to make a call to the mainland and it sounds like I'm in a barnyard. It's never been like this before, and I'm not sure how they got into the area, if for food and then became pets, or if they naturally traversed.
Alexander,
no chicken is illegal.
Alexander Eisen wrote,
natural migration,
that there are more than 100 feral chickens and roosters roaming the street on Kanaku Street and local Y Place. He says you have to dodge them all over the roadway while other residents have watched them create havoc by jumping on garbage bins, ripping up trash bags, scattering trash and debris everywhere.
Yeah, no, and they're destructive too. They dig up yards, easements, shoulder areas, gardens. They forage under walls. They forage under sidewalks. They can damage local infrastructure, apparently. They're just becoming a massive, massive problem.
Community members also say the feral fowl are now becoming a statewide problem. Hawaii News Now said an additional $50,000 in proposed funding for Oahu's feral chicken eradication program was approved for consideration and will now be reviewed by the council on June 1st.
This seems like a giant missed opportunity to me. All those chickens crossing the road, no one asking why.
Oh, man alive.
Sorry. Wow. Also, do you, in a serious turn... Man.
I'm surprised that didn't come from John.
I'm surprised it didn't come from me too.
Have you heard of the emu war, of the great emu war in Australia?
No.
So it was in 1932. This is a real thing. It was essentially the same thing where these emus would just come and eat all the crops and they literally went to war. Like open gunfire with emu. The emus won the war. They survived. I'm not even kidding. So there's your research for the day.
Narnfan just tweeted over just the real, isn't this what shotguns are for?
Right.
Yeah. Just listen, take Joe Biden's advice.
I bet there's some rule. Shotgun. I bet there's some rule where you can't, where you're, like, you're not allowed to kill the feral chicken.
I'm sure there's some stupid law written by some stupid council somewhere that says, you know, that makes it punishable by crime, by fine or whatever, misdemeanor. Well, slaughtering chickens in the middle of the street.
If they shotgun the chickens, then there's going to be 1,000 people with their hands glued to the streets. So you can't do that. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Cromwell will be there.
I don't know if it accounts for all of Hawaii, but I found the ordinance. So this is just for Honolulu. It does say there is a law against shooting the feral chickens, but there's nothing in there about choking them.
Waka waka.
Come on, people. It's a serious problem, you two. It's making jokes over there. Ridiculous.
So bad.
Real radio. So bad. Come on.
I'm
disappointed in both of you.
I see your dad. For the record. I see your dad joke.
You call.
And, yeah. I raise you. I think I'm broken. From the Star Tribune. Minneapolis is dedicating $1 million in American Rescue Plan funds to expanding its urban tree canopy.
Oh, no. Really?
Yeah, they're going to spend $1 million to add 200,000 trees. So it's $500 per tree.
That's the best thing they could come up with for $1 million.
Apparently.
That's going to get the office workers back downtown.
The money will jumpstart the Green Minneapolis Climate Resiliency Initiative and that goal to add 200,000 trees by the year 2040. City of Minneapolis Park and the Recreation Board officials announced the initiative Monday alongside Elmer the Elm Tree, the official mascot of the Forestry Department since 1976.
Oh, Elmer was here. Okay. Oh, that's a big deal. Minneapolis received $271 million under the 2021 pandemic relief law. Mayor Jacob Frey pitched a plan in April to use the remaining $43 million on violence prevention, housing, and mental health services. But $1 million is getting redirected out there to plant a bunch of trees, so that's good.
Yeah, that's
going to do wonders to get people back downtown.
We'll talk a little bit more green initiatives coming up with Isaac Orr at 8:35 this morning, Center of the American Experiment, about whether or not we're going to get rolling blackouts here in the state, and also how Minneapolis and St. Paul are launching their own electric car sharing fleet. So we'll get into that a little bit later on in the show. In the meantime, new White House press secretary spends the first day spinning Biden's claim that higher taxes will help inflation.
Do you think that her job is to make Kamala Harris look smart?
I don't know.
Because on day one, you're already like, man, Psaki was good at this job. And Psaki was terrible. Psaki was awful. But now, you know, they brought this lady in, and she can't even answer a basic question.
No,
and it did. It was a word vomit type of answer. It just went on and on and on and on. And the first thing I thought when I watched it was like, wow, she might make Kamala Harris look smart.
The new White House press secretary, according to the article here from Daily Wire, same as the old White House press secretary, at least in terms of her ability to spin words and dodge. On Monday, Karine Jean-Pierre began her first day rebuffing several questions about how higher taxes would drive down costs and help the American people with nonsensical answers. We don't have the audio of this, but I believe when she opened up her first White House press secretary, when she first, you know, opened up her first day on the job, she mentioned that she was, you know, she's obviously black, she was an immigrant, and also gay.
Yeah, she checked all those boxes right away. So we are not allowed to criticize.
Yeah, she is
criticism proof.
She's got her armor.
Yes,
your Democrat armor.
Once you criticize her, you are anti either one or all of those things. I don't know which one or where it may fall on any given day.
This, however, was the moment between her and Peter Ducey. Fox News White House correspondent Peter Ducey was reading a recent tweet from Biden's Twitter account. Here's how this whole exchange went down.
The president's Twitter account posted the other day, "You want to bring down inflation, let's make sure the wealthiest corporations pay their fair share." Mm-hmm. How does raising taxes on corporations reduce inflation?
So, are you talking about a specific tweet?
Yeah. He tweeted, "You want to bring down inflation, let's make sure the wealthiest corporations pay their fair share."
Look, you know, we have talked about this past year about making sure that the wealthiest among us are paying their fair share, and that is important to do, and that is something that the president has been working on every day when we talk about inflation and lowering costs. And so it's very important that as we're seeing costs rise, as we're talking about how to build America that's safe, that's equal for everyone, and doesn't leave anyone behind. Mm. That is an important part of that as well.
But how does raising taxes on corporations lower the cost of gas, the cost of a used car, the cost of food for everyday Americans?
So look, I think we encourage those who have done very well, right, especially those who care about climate change, to support a fair tax code that doesn't charge manufacturers, workers, cops, builders a higher percentage of their earnings, that the most fortunate people in our nation, and not let this stand in the way of reducing energy costs and fighting this existential problem, if you think about that as an example, and to support basic collective bargaining rights as well, right? That's also important. But look, it is, without having a fair tax code, which is what I'm talking about, then manufacturing workers, cops, it's not fair for them to have to pay higher taxes than the folks that who are not paying taxes at all.
But what does that have to do with inflation? The president said, "You want to bring down inflation, let's make sure the wealthiest corporations pay their fair share." Jeff Bezos came out and tweeted about that. He said the newly created disinformation board should review this tweet. Would you be okay with that?
Look, it's not a huge mystery why one of the wealthiest individuals on Earth, right, opposes an economic agenda that is for the middle class, that cuts some of the biggest costs families face, fights inflation for the long haul, right? And that's what we're talking about. That's why we're talking about lowering inflation here, and adds to the historic deficit reduction the president is achieving by asking the richest taxpayers and corporations to pay their fair share. That is what we're talking about.
Wow. That's amazing.
That was a dodge and weave, and yeah.
And she was just plowing on forward with whatever it is she wanted to answer, you know, talk about unfair tax codes and equity and climate change. And at no point did she ever address the substance of the question. Zero.
And if you stroll into commentary around that exchange, right, especially on, you know, Twitter, you'll find those on the left that'll rush to her defense and say, oh, she owned him. She owned Ducey. There's a lack of intellectual honesty going on here. And this is, you know, very sort of part and parcel to the problem that we have in this country right now, is that people aren't being honest. That was a complete dodge, you know, and a redirect over to your sort of standard Democrat liberal talking points. It's her first day on the job, you know, and Ducey was asking a legitimate question, but there wasn't even like an attempt to go and answer it in any way, shape, or form. She just kept, you know, redirecting and shoving it aside. And it's like call center White House press secretary Q&A. And I know that that's not exclusive to either party. You know, even the press secretaries under Donald Trump, they had their book in front of them where they could go to, like in a call center, you know, when somebody says, I don't want your toner, and they have a response for you, you know. And she was clearly looking at that on her sheet, but she didn't have an answer to that question. It wasn't there in front of her. And so because she didn't have an answer in front of her, she had no way to answer the question, because she didn't have an answer herself, because she doesn't know, because it doesn't do anything to lower inflation.
Of course not. It was a stupid tweet from a stupid president. It made no sense. But, you know, if you're on the left, you looked at that and all you saw was, yeah, make the rich pay more. And it probably gave you a nice little dopamine hit, and you hit that.
Yep.
On the internet, and it made you pretty happy. But there's absolutely no substance to it. It's an absolutely ludicrous statement to make for the President of the United States. We should have higher expectations. We should hold them to higher standards. And I don't even, you know, the first day on the job excuse. Sorry. You signed on to be the White House press secretary.
Yeah, good point.
You should be prepared for these types of questions. And if you're not, you should at least have the honesty. And Jen Psaki, to her credit, would do this from time to time. You should at least have the honesty saying, I don't have an answer to that. I'll get back to you.
Yeah.
Remember the whole circle back thing? Rather than do that, just say you'll circle back. That's all you got to do, and they'll leave you alone.
I imagine that will be in bold and italicized on her cheat sheet for the next time she gets up there. All right, coming up, we're going to revisit this from yesterday. I got a few more details.
Under my predecessor, the great MAGA king.
Why Biden is deploying Trump's MAGA brand against the GOP. Ultra Justice Drip. Twin Cities News Talk.
Like Ultra Drew or Mega Drew? I think Mega Drew is better. Ultra Drew. Tough to say.
I am, I think about it, I'm actually surprised that, I almost don't want to say it out loud, I'm surprised that a radio station hasn't called themselves MAGA. MAGA Radio.
Are you surprised? I'm not.
A little bit.
I'm not.
I don't know. I could see that happening. Mm. You know.
Okay.
Depending.
Yeah, depending on a lot.
Depending on a lot of things.
Depending on a lot of things.
Yeah, MAGA Radio. Yeah. I don't
M-A-G-A.
I don't know. Maybe there's a reason why I shouldn't have said that out loud. 651-989-5855.
K-MAGA.
It's the phone number here. Yeah, that's what I was thinking. It's the M-A-G-A. I was, you know, flip the W upside down kind of deal, you know, that, but...
I don't think it.
Well, then it would be Wagga Wagga.
Yeah. No, I see. You take a W and make it into an M. So you take.
Yeah,
I got you.
Let's go to the phones.
Add it to my list of ideas.
I called your dad joke.
You did.
John in North Branch, good morning.
Hey, good morning, guys. So I wasn't able to get my my call in yesterday, but I just wanted to say what a breath of fresh air it is for Dr. Scott Jensen to be the nominee or the endorsed candidate. Just, like, for instance, he'll admit when he was wrong, like, or he didn't explain things further enough, like the gun thing that he addressed yesterday. And I'm not going to name drop anyone but Paul Gazelka and all those, Tim Pawlenty. I mean, I wasn't going to name drop. I'm sorry.
But you did. I'm not going to name drop but Paul Gazelka.
That just happened.
for instance, you know, he always tries to duck and dodge. Not that he's, you know, he's a friend of the show. But it's just such a breath of fresh air to get someone endorsed that's not going to BS, not going to say something that he doesn't believe in, and then also when he'll own up to his mistakes, or he'll research things further.
I mean, it's up to every individual voter out there if they're going to accept sort of his explanation for the whole flap around his stance on Second Amendment rights. But what I would encourage you to do is just ask yourself this question. Do you really think with a Scott Jensen, you know, a governorship, if you think Scott Jensen in the governor's mansion, you know, signing the bills, do you really think that he's going to get on board with any, you know, restrictions towards your gun rights or gun ownership? No, of course not. You know, as he said, you know, he played a game and he played it poorly and he lost that game and he learned from it. Now, it's up to you and it's up to every individual voter if you accept that explanation or not. If you think there's a better choice for governor out there when it comes to Second Amendment rights, you know, come November, that's going to be up to you to decide. But for me, I think it's a fine explanation. I think it's an acceptable explanation. And I would like to move on from that issue personally. But, you know, every time we have him on, there's always someone that hasn't heard that explanation yet and has got those questions. And that's probably going to happen for the entirety of his campaign.
Oh, no, you must have misunderstood. I'm in support of Dr. Scott Jensen.
No, I got you. I was just elaborating. That wasn't directed at you, John.
Of course.
Yeah.
Well, I appreciate your time. Thank you for your radio program. You guys keep up the good work.
Thanks, John. Appreciate it. Thanks for calling in.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Yeah, there's a correlation. As we get into, there's this Yahoo version. We talked a bit about this on yesterday's show, in the 6 o'clock hour, which you can catch up on if you missed it on the iHeartRadio app on the podcast. Why Biden is deploying Trump's MAGA brand against the GOP, and a little bit more details in here that we didn't have yesterday. But to his phone call, like, I don't like this branding of ultra MAGA, you know, mega MAGA, whatever, in an attempt to, you know, label the far right. You know, obviously this isn't moving a lot of needles here, right? They're appealing to the base of individuals that already don't like, you know, Trump supporters and, you know, Trump more specifically. However, I do think that it does have the potential to turn off individuals who might be open to looking at, just for the sake of argument, a Dr. Scott Jensen, if he were to be labeled as the ultra MAGA, you know, gubernatorial candidate, right? Individuals that might be like, well, I don't really like what Walz did during the pandemic, but Jensen's mega MAGA. Like, that's where on a lot of different levels with a lot of different candidates, not just Jensen. I'm just using that phone call as the example. I could see where that could potentially be somewhat effective. And the left's really good at that. This particular labeling I find really dumb. I think the right's done a good job of sort of embracing it and turning it on its head. At the same time, though, I do think that there could be something to be said of an individual who might be open to supporting another candidate, but if they get labeled as this, they might go, nah,
yeah,
he's mega MAGA, he's ultra MAGA.
Right. Well, the best thing to come out of Donald Trump's, you know, presidency and the whole movement, you know, the whole MAGA movement, is that, you know, for years and years and years, Democrats could call Republicans a name and Republicans would run away and cower. And do everything they can, be like, no, I'm not that, no, I swear, no. And they would beg and plead, do everything they could. With Trump and the MAGA movement, you call them a name and they're just like, whatever, screw you. They'll just own it and move on. You know, they're not playing that game anymore. They're better at that game than the Democrats are now. And that never used to be the case.
So on Thursday, April 21st, Biden left Washington for a pair of fundraisers in the Pacific Northwest, one in Portland, another in Seattle. By the time he returned to the White House the following Monday, his effort to brand the Republican Party as hostage to Trump's extremists would be underway. He had never before used the phrase MAGA, Make America Great Again, Trump's 2016 campaign slogan since he becoming president. He used it for the second time later that day in April during another fundraiser. Now, we did talk about, you know, sort of where it came from. There's a little bit more detail in here that I thought was kind of interesting. The White House says, Drew, you've pointed this out several times, Jen Psaki in particular, that the MAGA branding was entirely Biden's own idea. But it also reflects what Democratic pollsters have found to be an effective message. We've tested MAGA Republicans and Trump Republicans who also worked on the 2020 campaign, right? Other pollsters and consultants have arrived at similar conclusions in a PowerPoint slide deck compiled in late April. Naveen Nayak, who we didn't mention yesterday, of the Center for American Progress, presented polling that showed branding all Republicans with the MAGA brand would dampen enthusiasm for the GOP. After messaging, voters tell us that MAGA Republicans are extreme, radical, power-hungry, and racist. He added that MAGA was a potential dog whistle to our base.
Oh, no.
Of the kind,
dog whistle.
Of the kind Republicans have been effectively using for years. Okay. Since early May, Biden has invoked an ultra MAGA agenda, which he says is extreme, as most MAGA things are.
Like what? What's in that agenda, Joe? I would love if nobody gets to ask Joe Biden questions because, you know, he's just the president of the United States. So, you know, he's off limits, apparently, to the press. But I would love somebody to ask him to really detail what's in this ultra MAGA agenda, Joe, that is so extreme and so radical and so dangerous.
So it sounds like it almost started with these polling firms and the White House just grabbed onto it. But I'm glad you made that point, though, because it's something that we haven't said in a while, but it's absolutely true. Nobody ever points. What did Trump do when he was in office that you were so against?
Yeah.
What rights were taken from you? What
agenda item?
Yeah.
Became law.
Yeah.
That hurt you.
What war was started? Mm-hmm. You know who?
Which U.S. soldiers did he send overseas? Like Joe Biden is sending to Somalia right now.
Yeah, which we haven't even gotten into.
Yeah.
Suddenly reversing that whole deal. We're going to
back to Somalia.
Yeah. Awesome.
Because that's great.
Yeah, what did Trump do? What did Trump do that was so bad?
Yeah. 651-989-5855.
Talkback on the iHeartRadio app.
JD at TwinCitiesNewsTalk.com. Tell us where did Trump touch you?
Yeah.
That hurt so bad.
Point to it. Let us know. Nobody ever says anything.
I don't know. I don't know what is the agenda item.
Yeah.
He's just a jerk, though. He's just a jerk. He made fun of people. Sometimes he would tweet and make me sad.
No, he's not a jerk. Senate Majority Leader Jeremy Miller.
Accurate.
Minnesota's divided capital strikes multi-billion-dollar end-of-session budget tax deal. The deal includes $4 billion in tax cuts, $1 billion for classrooms over 3 years. We'll get into that with
so much money.
Jeremy Miller next here on Justice and Dre.
Regarding the new press secretary and her answer to Peter Ducey in regards to inflation, first she needs a lesson in how to circle back, and secondly the answer really would be we're working on that and we're confident that the answer is choking a chicken.
Oh,
it's an ultra MAGA chicken insurrection.
Come on.
I appreciate the energy.
Like technology and money and really like miracles go into creating all of these things like the iHeartRadio app and the ability to stream the show globally anywhere and to give real-time responses to the program and record them and send them to us to be able to play on the, like, all of so many hours of effort and genius and brilliance went into that, and we're using it to make chicken choking jokes.
Why are you
lighten up a little bit, Drew. Come on.
651-989-5855.
I'm disappointed in all of you.
If that's the line.
I'm disappointed.
Let me repeat all the jokes that I found so disappointing earlier in this hour.
I'm just saying.
So that I can make a point about how disappointed I am with all of your silly jokes. Which, if you missed, you can catch on the podcast on the iHeartRadio app once the show is over. From the Star Tribune, Minnesota's top political leaders have agreed to use historic revenues pouring into the state to cut taxes by $4 billion over the next 3 years while pumping an equal amount into classrooms, healthcare, and public safety initiatives. They would use future projected revenue to help leave another $4 billion unspent in anticipation of harder economic times, according to a framework of a deal unveiled by Governor Tim Walz and legislative leaders yesterday. Joining us right now, very pleased to welcome to the show to talk more about this, Senate Majority Leader Jeremy Miller. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, guys. Hope you're doing well.
Yeah, sorry for the bad dad jokes, but thanks for joining us on this this Tuesday morning. So, so just give us your overall thoughts on
the bad and the ugly.
Yeah, on this deal that was announced yesterday by our illustrious Governor Tim Walz.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. That's a pretty good way to describe things here at the end of session.
Yeah.
So when you look at when the budget forecast was originally released, showing at first it was a $7.7 billion surplus, and then it grew to $9.3 billion in February, the number one priority for Republicans was getting this money back to the people of the state of Minnesota. And our proposals included an income tax reduction. Of course, Minnesota is one of the highest tax states in the country, especially when it comes to income taxes, and then we also propose the full elimination of Social Security taxes. Minnesota is one of only 12 states that still taxes Social Security benefits. Now, if you look on the flip side, what did Democrats propose? Well, they had billions and billions and billions of dollars of new proposed spending. And they proposed so much spending, guys, that it actually, in some areas, exceeded the amount that was available, the amount that was coming in. So the way I look at this agreement, and this is the framework of the agreement, the details will be worked out in the conference committees, because I don't think anyone wants three people in the room making all these decisions. So we're going to make those decisions through the conference committee process, and Republicans will bring our ideas, Democrats will bring their ideas. But if you look at this framework, it's actually pretty impressive what we were able to accomplish. So not only is there $4 billion in permanent ongoing tax relief, yeah, there's $4 billion in spending, which is probably more than what most of us wanted to see. But guys, there's $4.2 billion on the bottom line, meaning that's $4.2 billion that we're not spending. Now, if the economy slows down, which there are some indicators that it will, that dollar amount will likely shrink. But there's still going to be a fairly significant amount of money on the bottom line as the next legislature comes in. And I can tell you that if Republicans continue to hold on to the Senate, and if we flip the House, and if Scott Jensen is elected governor, not only are we going to go line through line through the budget, not only is the Jensen administration going to once and for all address all the fraud, waste, and abuse in some of these government programs that the Democrat administration has just let go by, but we are going to focus on significant tax relief if we have Republicans in full control over the next after the next election.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that the this end of session is going to be very interesting to see what can get wrapped up and how quickly it can get wrapped up and how many, you know, 24-hour committee sessions we're going to have to hammer out some of these details. But it is sort of setting the table for time to start campaigning, right? I mean, I think that's, you know, part of the motivation of getting this wrapped up and not having a special session this time around is, you know, everybody's got a campaign to win out there, most everybody anyway. You know, everybody wants to get running. So if you're a, you know, if you're, say, like, put on your Republican strategist hat for just a moment, you know, what are you telling Republican candidates out there about this deal specifically that they can go out and run on and be proud of?
Well, guys, what I would tell not only Republican candidates, but the people of the state of Minnesota is focus on the issues that are on people's mind. Number one, public safety. Violent crime is absolutely out of control. And this whole defund the police movement and anti-police rhetoric has really put not only a negative spotlight on the honorable profession of law enforcement, but it is causing police officers to retire at a faster rate and younger age than ever before. This proposal, this agreement, invests in public safety. We need more good cops on the streets. It will result in less crime. That's why we felt that investing in public safety was really, really important. And another thing I would tell folks is look at education. Let's make sure that our kids are getting a quality education in the classroom. If 40% of our kids are not reading at grade level, not only does that make every other subject area more difficult for the kids, but it gives them fewer opportunities to be successful. Let's give kids every opportunity to be successful in the classroom and beyond. And if they're not reading at grade level, guys, that's problematic. We need to make some investments to make sure that teachers have the tools they need to teach kids the skills they need to be successful in the classroom. So I think the issues are on our side. You have record inflation, you have record crime, you have kids falling behind in the classroom. Under Democrat leadership in the governor's office and in the Minnesota House, guys, it's time to make some changes, and it's time to work together and get good things done for the people.
Talking with Jeremy Miller, Senate Majority Leader, on the deal includes $4 billion in tax cuts, $1 billion in classrooms over 3 years. I know that you still have details to work out on this before you all adjourn. Your confidence that we won't have a session that we like to call special?
You know, it's the next few days will be very telling. We want the conference committee members to work through these details. There is a tremendous amount of work that needs to get done over the course of the next probably 2 to 4 days in order for us to get done during a regular session. But my hope is that we can still finish up on time without a special session.
Senate Majority Leader Jeremy Miller, thanks so much for joining the program. Any last items you want to leave people with regarding this deal and what we can expect here in the final days?
Yeah, there's one more thing. And again, I know the spending is more than what folks, many folks would have liked to have seen. Another area that Republicans are going to focus on is additional funding for nursing homes. We have nursing homes, long-term care facilities, disability service providers that are facing permanent closures. That's why you saw Republicans invest in nursing homes and long-term care facilities and disability service providers. So that's another piece of the spending that is very important. That is something we need to do to prevent these closures. So all in all, guys, it's a good deal. It's a balanced deal. We leave money on the bottom line, and we're excited to see what the next few days bring us, as well as we'll be working for a successful November.
And let's plan on touching base next week and sort of recap where everything falls together as these committees hammer out all the details, okay?
That sounds good, guys. Thanks
all right,
for having
fantastic.
Me. Have a wonderful day.
Take care. You too.
Let's go to the phones, and we'll talk with John in Golden Valley. Good morning, John. Welcome to Twin Cities News Talk, Justice and Drew.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call. So I was at the convention this weekend, and people are MAGA fired up. But one thing, the Democrats are going to only run on negativity towards Republicans. I saw an email from the Democrats characterizing Scott Jensen as a right-wing extremist, and one thing after another like that. They have absolutely nothing good to run on, not schools, not crime, not the economy, nothing. So it's going to be 100% negativity, and that's what we should expect.
Oh, yeah.
Well, and they wouldn't.
For sure.
They wouldn't have to punch down if they had anything they could run on their own. But they don't have anything to run on, unless they want to run on. Hey, you have less money because, you know, the prices of everything is higher, including the gas you put in your car.
What have they run on in the past? They always run on like we're affordable housing. How's that going? How's affordable housing going? You know, and they can't run on crime. They can't run on education. They can't run on they can't run on immigration. They can't run on inflation. They can't run on gas prices. They can't run on the... What can they run on? What can they tout? As if you're a Democrat running for office this election, please, 651-989-5855. There's nothing more valuable than free airtime. What are you running on that isn't just demonizing the Republicans?
Well, they can't run on climate change either. I forgot to mention this earlier, but we played the audio from the new White House press secretary and one of the claims that she made in response to Fox News's Ducey with regard to, you know, taxing the, you know, the fair share of the wealthy and how that drives down inflation. She ended up bringing up climate change, right? You know, got to deal with climate change. I got a message from my weather app yesterday saying that April saw the highest carbon dioxide output ever. I was like, well, why are we doing all this climate change? Why are we doing all this climate change mitigation if April just saw? I mean, we've been spending billions, if not trillions, of dollars globally on this, and April saw I didn't look much further than the story and watched a bit of the story of April. We saw the largest release of carbon dioxide into the atmosphere ever. And I'm like, well, okay, then at what point do we go? Can we stop that then? Because obviously whatever we're doing is not working.
Not really
accomplished. At all. But we are spending $1 million to plant 200,000 trees in the city of Minneapolis.
You know, Democrats have been in charge of this state, and they've been in charge of the Twin Cities now for generations, essentially, with a few minor exceptions here and there. What have they done? What have they done to make things better? Minneapolis better now than it was 5 years ago? Better now than it was 10 years ago?
Well,
is it cleaner? Is it safer? Are there more or less businesses? Are there more or less office workers? Are the roads in better or worse condition? What have they done with all the power and money that they've had in this state?
It is better for some people, but those are mostly the people that don't like to obey the law. Yeah. Like, for those people,
those going
great. It's been a boom.
Yeah.
It's been fantastic.
It's a shiny city on the hill that they all dream of.
If you're into carjacking, Minneapolis is the place for you.
If you're into not getting punished for committing crimes,
Minneapolis is the place for you.
Come to beautiful Minneapolis.
Seriously.
Bob in St. Paul, go ahead.
Yeah, I couldn't be more disappointed in a majority leader's call. You overcollected, you're lowering your tax rate, which should happen anyway because your tax rate's too high, you're over collecting, and we're going to go spend $4 billion more dollars than we planned, and we're all supposed to be happy, and we're going to, oh, by the way, we're keeping $4 billion just in case because it's our money, it's not yours. They don't get it.
Yeah, I didn't take that call as him saying we're supposed to be happy. I take it as, you have a one leg of a three-legged table in government that you have said that you have control over, and you do the best you can with that one leg.
Yeah,
that's how I took it.
I heard him say, and he might have used these words, he might not have, but this was supposed to be a good deal. This is not a good deal.
Yeah. But you're never going to get a good deal when the DFL has the governor and the DFL has the House. You know, you're not going to get a good deal. You just try to get the best deal you can.
Yeah.
Alan and Crosby, go ahead.
Well, I totally agree with Bob, but I understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
But what was really disappointing is that it's going on and on and on about the education system. I believe we spend more money than almost every state per student in here, and we've got one of the worst education rates.
Mm-hmm.
It's ridiculous. He almost sounds like a Democrat pandering to the teachers union.
Well,
very, very disappointing.
I cut, individuals, and thank you for the phone call. I cut individuals, like Senate Majority Leader Jeremy Miller, some slack when it comes to this. And I echo what Drew said, and I don't want to repeat it, because I totally agree. But you need to be positive moving forward, And there's a lot of subjectivity going on here. This is the hand that they're dealt. And would I like us to get all the money back? Yeah, I would. I think all that surplus should go back. Every, it should proportionally go back. Every single penny should proportionally go back to the people of Minnesota. But it's not going to happen. And, you know, and maybe if people can get motivated enough to continue to put pressure and we can, you know, get enough people fired up to go out and vote to change some elections, then in the future we can go down that road. But that's not where we are right now. And, it's tough. It's a tough situation. And Jeremy Miller has to be positive moving forward because there's elections that need to be won. So, and again, now I am just kind of rewording what Drew said a moment ago. Speaking about education, though, we have one story here that kind of points to a part of the problem we'll dive into ahead of our conversation with our energy guru from Center of the American Experiment, Isaac Orr, at 8:35. Out of Alpha News, the Pledge of Allegiance is now preceded by land acknowledgement and BLM statement in at least one Roseville public school.